The Sword of the Lord, The Roots of Fundamentalism in an American Family, by Andrew Himes. Introduction. In this book, my intention is to explore the roots of fundamentalism in America in a critical, thoughtful, and honest way, using the history of my own family of Baptist fundamentalists as a rich source of insights. On my mother's side, my family history has embodied the narrative arc of American fundamentalism for almost three centuries. My maternal ancestors, the Rice clan, arrived on American shores as part of a wave of Scots-Irish immigrants during the early half of the 18th century. They came from Wales originally and joined the stream of Welsh, Scottish, English, and Irish settlers who became known as the Scots-Irish. These Scots-Irish had been uprooted before. In the 17th century, King James transported the borderers, a motley but largely Presbyterian assortment of combative Scots, Irish, Welsh, and English yeomen, to the northern counties of Ireland to solidify his conquest of that land. Their Irish sojourn was threatened by famine, made difficult by the violent opposition of their Catholic neighbors, and impeded by conflict within their own community. Over the next century, the Scots-Irish, my ancestors among them, then re-migrated in sizable waves to colonial America, where they settled at first in the foothills of Appalachia and then spread across the mountains and throughout the South. They carried with them their distinctive culture, shaped by centuries of marginal existence, deep insecurity, and the trauma that results from almost constant war or violent conflict. The traumatic history of the Scots-Irish helped to shape their religion, combining Calvinist fatalism with combative self-assertion, melding a literal reading of the Bible with a profound regard for democracy and the rights of the individual. The Scots-Irish were quick to wrath, radical in their righteousness, and also profoundly moved by love for their families, their communities, and their new American home. My own Rice ancestors were Calvinists and Presbyterians, and they settled at first in the Carolina foothills of the Appalachians and then traveled over the mountains to plant small farms in the lush valleys and broad plains beyond the Smoky Mountains. In the early 19th centuries, the Rice clan joined yet another migration, this time west to the rich Missouri River Valley, where they could benefit from cheap land and the cheap slave labor necessary to farm it. Like their neighbors, they built large-scale hemp plantations farmed by numerous Negro slaves, and the hemp they produced turned into rope for binding cotton bales and, through slavery, Negroes in the deeper South. Their successful life in Missouri was destroyed by the Civil War. Missouri, in particular, was the scene of the most violent conflict, with siblings and parents, close friends and neighbors, pitted against each other in a vicious and bloody series of fights. It is estimated that over 1,000 battles between organized military forces took place in Missouri during the Civil War, more than any other state, in addition to many more thousands of acts of murder, mayhem, and simple criminality committed by individuals and small groups. In the midst of the war, thousands of desperate refugees fled the bitter fighting and devastation in border states such as Missouri. Those who were die-hard supporters of the Confederacy, including many slaveholders, fled farther south to Texas, where they settled down to rebuild their lives and communities after the war. My own Rice family was among them. The traumatic experience of the Civil War and its aftermath in the 19th century was the incubator of Christian fundamentalism in 20th century America. The agony of the Civil War has had a devastating impact on subsequent generations of Southerners, many of whom carried the burden and promise of their Scots-Irish heritage. By contrast with the rest of the South, Union armies never invaded Texas during the Civil War, and Texas suffered relatively little damage to its economic infrastructure. Moreover, many Texans thrived as the state became a hub of trade and agriculture, and Texas ports became the goal of ships seeking to run the Union blockade and win lucrative profits supplying the armies, industries, and civilian markets of the South. The white population of Texas from before the war then was never truly beaten, never truly surrendered, was never brought violently to terms with the new realities. However, many of the new refugees from the former slave-owning states to the north and east of Texas had been beaten most violently and decisively. Many of them remained in Texas because they refused to acknowledge their defeat or accept their losses. It was in Texas that the myth of the lost cause would resonate most powerfully, and it was Texas that turned out to be especially congenial to the development of Christian fundamentalism in America. My great-grandfather Will Rice was born in Missouri on the eve of the Civil War, grew up in post-war Texas, and worked as a cowboy, a farmer and rancher, a horse trader, and a land speculator. He was saved and felt the call to become a preacher, went off to attend the Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, and then returned to Texas to raise his family. He became involved in politics, joined fraternal societies, including the Ku Klux Klan, and was elected in Texas to the Texas State Senate in 1921, the year the Klan took over control of both houses of the Texas legislature and elected one of their own to the U.S. Senate. Will Rice's son, my granddad John R. Rice, also became a preacher and evangelist. Although he disagreed with his dad about the Klan, he was nonetheless deeply conservative in his religion and his politics. Granddad locked horns with the local religious establishment over his criticism of the Southern Baptist Convention and its compromises with liberalism and modernism, and then helped to lead an exodus of fundamentalists from the Southern Baptist denomination in Texas. He started a fundamentalist newspaper in Dallas in 1934 called The Sword of the Lord, and spent the next several decades helping to develop a national fundamentalist network of churches, denominations, conferences, publishing houses, schools and institutes, and other institutions. He wrote and published over 200 books and pamphlets during his lifetime, with a combined circulation of over 60 million copies, with such provocative titles as All Satan's Apples Have Worms, Predestined for Hell, Bobbed Hair, Bossy Wives and Women Preachers, The Dance, Child of the Brothel, Sister of Gambling and Drunkenness, Mother of Lust, Road to Hell, Bible Facts About Heaven, The Home, and Is God a Dirty Bully? Famously, he wrote a small pamphlet titled, What Must I Do to Be Saved? That was published in over 30 languages with over 40 million copies distributed. The Sword developed into the largest and most influential fundamentalist newspaper in the world, with a readership of several hundred thousand preachers, deacons, evangelists, missionaries, Sunday school teachers, and various other soul winners. Granddad mentored and encouraged hundreds or thousands of other and younger fundamentalist and evangelical leaders, such as Billy Graham, Jerry Falwell, Bob Jones Jr., and W.A. Criswell, a fellow Texan who became the most prominent Southern Baptist of his generation and helped to lead the Southern Baptist Convention's return to its fundamentalist roots in the last third of the 20th century. Granddad wrote and published thousands of editorials and sermons in The Sword of the Lord. Over several decades, through his battles to define both the principles and acceptable limits of fundamentalism and the acceptable behavior of fundamentalists themselves, he helped to lay the basis for the rise of the religious right in America. He died in 1980 when I was 30 years old, a few months after the election of Ronald Reagan to the presidency. For many, that election marked the beginning of an era. The entire history of Protestant fundamentalism is a topic beyond my ambitions. In particular, the history of the religious right and the ascension of Jerry Falwell and the moral majority has been related in scores of books, and I won't try to retell it here. I'm interested instead in what came before the accession to power of the modern religious right. In particular, I started this book to understand the specific history that created the fundamentalist world in which I grew up. Who were my ancestors, including my grandfather? Why did they believe as they did? How did their religious ideas grow from the soil of their lives and condition their actions? To find out, I researched as far back as I could go into my family's history, and then forward up to the death of my grandfather, John R. Rice, a fundamentalist leader whose career spanned the critical decades from the Scopes Monkey Trial in 1925, at a time when fundamentalists were first attempting to forbid the teaching of evolution in public schools, to the national prominence of the moral majority in the 1980 election of President Ronald Reagan. I've done my best to place my family in the broader context of evangelical Christianity and Protestant fundamentalism in the history of the United States. This book is not intended to be an exposé of fundamentalism or a polemic against fundamentalism. It is important to me to try my best to explore the truth about my family, our faith, and our history over the generations. So I have approached this task with humility and all the compassion I can muster. I'm grateful to my fundamentalist family for instilling in me a profound love for others, high moral standards, and a deep commitment to justice.